airstrike on a tent in Gaza City. Health officials say there's no safe place in all of Gaza City. The medical director for the Al-Ahli Hospital says there's no room in it for any more injured people. The medical charity Doctors Without Borders has also confirmed that another of his staff members and his family members were killed in an Israeli airstrike in central Gaza. Over 50,600 Palestinians have been killed in the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza since October 2023. Our correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier from Gaza with the latest updates on Israel's unrelenting attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
As several and successive Israeli strikes were conducted and carried out against the Palestinian and people in Rafah City over the past couple of hours. We are talking about at least five successive Israeli strikes hit Al-Junaynah neighborhood in the eastern part of the city amid the ongoing wide-scale military offensive that targets the entire city. We are talking about really catastrophic situations and conditions that are still befalling the Palestinian people there in Rafah City who are still trapped between, as you know, the rock of the ongoing and ceaseless Israeli bombardments and attacks and the hot place of the catastrophic humanitarian conditions. Palestinian people are still completely and utterly deprived of having any significant access to the basic humanitarian essentials, and they are still exposed to more cruel attacks carried out from air, land and sea, targeting the Palestinian people there. And as you know, we are talking about more deafening bombardments and explosions took place in Tal al-Sultan neighborhood, in addition to Ashabura neighborhood as well. Those areas witnessed more detonations of the Palestinian residential squares and buildings, according to several eyewitnesses there, that Tal al-Sultan neighborhood was completely decimated by the Israeli occupation forces. We were talking about the entire neighborhood that was completely wiped out by the Israeli occupation forces using the Israeli airstrikes, the Israeli artillery shelling, in addition to the constant detonations of the Palestinian residential buildings there.
At least a dozen missiles hit a school in Gaza City where many Palestinians had taken shelter. The strikes killed at least 33 Palestinians, many of them women and children. Eyewitnesses say ambulances and medical crew were denied entry to the area where the massacre occurred. Our correspondent Qadir Ibrahim has this report.
Here I am in Dar al-Arqam sheltering school, from the place of the very horrible massacre the Israeli warplanes committed against the Palestinian civilians who were taking this place as a sheltering school. The Israeli missiles, 12 missiles, hit the building of the school, killed at least 33 Palestinians, many of them are children, women and civilians, and wounded over 100 of the people who were taking this place as a shelter and who thought they are very safe in this place. In just a few hours, the Israeli occupation aggressively bombed the three sheltering schools with almost 12 American-made missiles. As people describe what happened here as an akin to an earthquake, the smoke is still rising from one of the buildings, and people are still looking and searching for the remains of their beloved ones and for what remains of their belongings. Here we are in front of one of the witnesses who saw the explosion and was in the place of the massacre.
I live here near. Suddenly, a huge explosion happened. I rushed to the place to find the bodies of the martyrs scattered across the vicinity of the school, and many of them were children. The ambulance were banned from entering the area, and they were threatened by the occupation army. After the first attack, they returned and carried out another attack. Many martyrs are still buried until now under the rubble of the building, and there are no available means of extracting them out.
Along with my husband and one-year-old child, we're preparing bread to eat, but suddenly we got buried under the rubble by the horrible explosion. We were pulled out by a miracle. This is unbelievable and should not be acceptable by the people of the world. We are dying here. The children were torn apart with no fault but being Palestinian in our own land.
With very long record of crimes, this crime is not the first and it is not surely the last. But what boldens this aggressive Israeli occupation army is the international silence towards these atrocities. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
The Hamas resistance movement says it has decided not to transfer the Israeli captives from areas that the regime has ordered to evacuate. The spokesman for the Al-Qassam Brigades said half of the living captives are located in these areas. Abu Ubaidah said the group will keep them under strict security measures. The spokesman called on Israel to return to negotiations immediately if it is concerned about the lives of the captives. Abu Ubaidah said Israel bears full responsibility for the lives of these captives. A number of captives held in Gaza have already been killed by Israeli strikes. Pro-Palestine rallies have been held in several countries across the world on Friday in condemnation of Israel's genocide in the besieged territory.
The U.S. Embassy and the Americans are partners of a Zionist entity. Here they are. Here is Trump with everything he says to the entire world. He is a danger to the world, a danger to the nation, a danger to the laws of justice, a danger to humanity. The entire West has been exposed, and the free world must stand up to expose these practices and stand with the oppressed. The message of the Jordanian youth and the message of the popular forces is clearly and specifically titled, America is the serious, real, and main partner with the Zionist gangs in the war of extermination, starvation, and displacement.
Jordanians took to the streets of the capital Amman, waving Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Israel slogans. They condemned what they called the U.S. unconditional support for Israel amid the regime's massacres in Gaza. People in Algeria also marched through the streets, holding up banners and flags to voice their support for Gaza. They call for an immediate end to the Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. Similar protests were also held in Morocco, Libya, Lebanon, and Japan. Despite an active arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has extended an invitation to his Israeli counterpart Benjamin Netanyahu to visit Budapest. As the four-day trip unfolded, Orban announced quitting the ICC in a stark violation of international law. Our correspondent, Dieter Reinisch, reports from Budapest.
It is only the second visit after his U.S. trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today, here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, mostly innocent women, children, and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done, they spoke English and told me they do speak English. And when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the prime minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch from Budapest.
Welcome back. Israeli forces have intensified their violent operations in the occupied West Bank, deploying large numbers of troops. Regime forces have also abducted several Palestinians across the territory. We were earlier joined by a correspondent, Nika Hamed, for more details on the story.
Well, the situation, as you have described it in the West Bank, the situation remained extremely intensive. The aggression, the IOF aggression, is pushing ahead towards most of the Palestinian cities. In the last 24 hours, the Palestinians have bidded farewell to two Palestinians, one 17 years old boy, Youssef Bakr Zaghloul, in the area of Hussein to the south of Beit Lahem. The other is the Palestinian prisoner Hussein Hardan, 40 years old Palestinian, who had been killed, assassinated by the IOF forces in the area, of course, in the area of Jenin, where the IOF has pursued him and assassinated him. The situation on the ground remained that most of the Palestinian cities are under siege. The major Palestinian cities are closed. The entrances and exits are closed. The situation in the north of the northern part of the West Bank remains the same incursion, the same demolishment, the same arrest, same operations under the name of the military operation, the Iron Wall.
Yemen has vowed to continue with its pro-Palestine and retaliatory military operations against Israel and the U.S.
For the last 10 years, we have been victorious. We are not in a state of defeat, and this is the promise by God to us. This is why we have full trust in God. We will continue our support for the Palestinian people and our battle against the Israeli enemy. We will also confront the U.S., which is supporting the Israeli enemy and protecting it.
Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the U.S. resumed its attacks on Yemenis to stop their support for the Palestinians, but failed in its mission. He hailed the Yemeni armed forces for shooting down 17 U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drones, which he described as a great and unique achievement. Al-Houthi also said the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman is constantly on the run in the face of Yemeni naval attacks. The Yemeni leader also warned Arab regimes against supporting the U.S. and Israel. He said the U.S. is responsible for the Israeli crimes, as it has provided the regime with an all-out support, including through the supply of weaponry. Houthi stressed that Israeli crimes against Palestinians are aimed at forcibly displacing them. The Yemeni armed forces say they have carried out a fresh drone strike on Israeli military targets in support of the Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The armed forces spokesman said in a statement that the attack hit a target in Tel Aviv. Yahya Sari added that the armed forces also shot down a reconnaissance drone carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Yemen's Saada governorate. According to Sari, the giant shark drone was brought down by a homemade surface-to-air missile. The spokesman once again reiterated Yemen's commitment to support the Palestinians until Israel ends its genocide against the nation. Yemeni forces have been carrying out operations against Israeli cities and the regime's affiliated ships. Yemen has also fought back the U.S. aggression against the country over its support for Palestinians. Kremlin says the question of Iran's nuclear program should be resolved politically and diplomatically, urging restraint on all sides.
In our opinion, the problem of Iran's nuclear dossier should be discussed and resolved only by political and diplomatic means. And of course, we believe that all sides should maintain absolute restraint here and focus on diplomatic efforts when discussing all the issues.
Peskov said Russia's restoration of bilateral relations with the United States will not affect the ties with Tehran, and Iran remains its ally. Moscow has already offered to mediate between the two countries. The comments come after the U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to bomb Iran unless it comes to an agreement with Washington over its nuclear program. However, Tehran has repeatedly said it will not give in to pressure and is always open to negotiations based on mutual respect. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight.
Unable to comprehend and adapt to the rapidly changing world, U.S. President Donald Trump is engaging in imperialist and futile trade wars, especially with China, the world's largest trading nation. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "History is a mirror of the present, and a lesson for the present," goes an old Iranian proverb that is lost on Washington elites, who are spreading chaos all over the world with their misguided policies. Unable to comprehend and adapt to the rapidly changing world, U.S. President Trump is engaging in imperialist and futile trade wars, especially with China, the world's largest trading nation. Trump is blithely ignoring lessons from America's past when tariffs and retaliatory tariffs after the infamous Smoot-Hawley Act exacerbated the Great Depression in 1930s. For now, there is a plethora of reasons why Trump will fail and China will succeed in this economic war. Let us start with the big picture, which is Trump's obsession with trade deficit. To his credit, this is not a cynical populism that he adopted recently. He has been complaining about trade deficits for 35 years. To Trump, any country that has trade surplus with the U.S. is ripping off America. This is mercantilism, which has been the core principle of prosperity for many countries and empires for centuries. However, he is profoundly misguided when he has also wanted the dollar to be the global reserve currency. This is inherently contradictory to his objectives on trade. That is, the U.S. must run trade deficits in order for the dollar to be widely available around the world for trade and forex. This is the well-known Triffin's dilemma that was enunciated in 1960s. Thus, Trump's core trade and economic policies are deeply flawed. Second, Trump wants to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. since he grew up in 1950s and 60s when the U.S. led the world as an industrial powerhouse. However, thanks to Wall Street, America has been undergoing deindustrialization for the last 40 years. The financial overlords, who are the true rulers of America, want maximum returns for shareholders, which are only possible in the software and services sectors. Manufacturing is labor and capital intensive, and the profit margins are very low. This is why Western corporations started outsourcing manufacturing to Asia, China in particular. Trump will fail to bring manufacturing back, just as he could not in his first term. As mentioned before, the first hurdle is the American system. Second, after decades of offshoring, the U.S. simply does not have the workforce that has the skill or the desire to work in manufacturing. We have some charts to discuss. One of them shows the dramatic decline in the number of Americans employed in manufacturing, down 35% since 1979. The second chart says that China's gross manufacturing is three times as large as that of the United States of America. Finally, the United States does not have the infrastructure needed for manufacturing anymore. America's bridges, highways, and railways are old and crumbling. When it comes to seaports, the 7 of the 10 busiest ports are in China. Shanghai handles a staggering 5x as many containers as Los Angeles does. Chinese ports are also highly automated with autonomous vehicles and 5G, while the United States is largely reliant on humans. The biggest mistake that the West made was to discount China's rise and other countries like Russia and Iran in Eurasia. Thanks to imperialism and racism, the Washington consensus was that China would never be able to climb up the value chain in manufacturing. Everyone in the media, think tanks, and corporate America agreed that communist China could never compete with Western corporations, which were superior in technology and soft power. Moreover, the imperialists were confident that capitalism would change China. After all, who could resist McDonald's, Hollywood, and the neoliberal teachings of Harvard University? However, that transpired over the last 40 years, stunned Americans, the emergence of capitalism with Chinese characteristics. In the United States, the government is controlled by banks and corporations. In China, the reverse happened. The government sits above the capitalists to ensure that the free market works for the people. The Chinese government spent an enormous amount of money on infrastructure, education, technology, R&D, and a thriving ecosystem of not just manufacturing, but technologies of all sorts, while America was busy bombing Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, etc. Many Americans foolishly still think of China as a land of cheap labor, but more than half of all industrial robots in the world are being installed in Chinese factories every year. While Chinese companies were copycats in 2001 when China joined the WTO, they are now true innovators in smartphones, electric cars, e-commerce, robots, humanoids, drones, artificial intelligence, etc. Chinese company BYD is doing to EV what Henry Ford did to cars a century ago, provide excellent but affordable products through creative and efficient process management. China now makes EVs ranging from $5,000 to $120,000, meeting the needs of everyone across the social classes. Last year, the country produced more than 12 million electric cars, accounting for 2 in 3 EV worldwide, while exporting 6 million cars, gasoline, and electric cars globally. To the utter dismay of Americans, BYD is outselling Tesla in countries like Australia. Unable to compete freely, the United States has essentially banned Chinese electric cars and has placed sanctions on 1,000 Chinese tech companies. Violating all the WTO rules and international norms, the United States has also bullied European vassal countries into banning Huawei's 5G products and not selling semiconductor chipmaking gear to China. The delusional objective of Americans is to contain China by enforcing a small yard and high fence, that is, restrict China from advancing in a few critical technological sectors. However, as the Chinese artificial intelligence company DeepSeek proved, the Chinese are innovating rapidly under pressure. China is just one big innovation away from mastering semiconductor fabrication, that is, lithography, and that breakthrough is bound to happen soon. As for the U.S. hoping to stop China through a hot war, China has built the world's largest navy, hypersonic missiles, and even sixth-generation fighter jets. Every war game simulation by the Pentagon shows the U.S. losing to China. Also, after observing what happened to Ukraine, countries such as the Philippines will not dare to be geopolitical pawns for America. Thus, Trump cannot cripple China with his tariffs and trade wars. And unless he plans to impose tariffs on every trading nation, American corporations and consumers will simply import Chinese goods rerouted through Mexico, Vietnam, India, etc. Billionaire Trump's tariffs will make the lives of average Americans miserable by increasing inflation and the cost of living. The U.S. accounts for only 10% of China's international trade. The Global South, especially those who are members of the Belt and Road Initiative, will continue to be the biggest buyers of Chinese goods. Europe, which might be getting decoupled from the U.S., will be forced to look east for trade and technology partners, making the United States even more irrelevant on the world stage. How confident are the officials in Beijing about winning the trade war? Consider the rather stunning official statement by Chinese embassy in the U.S. If war is what the United States wants, be it a tariff war, a trade war, or any other type of war, we are ready to fight till the end.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Islamic Upbringing, where we dive deep into the essential aspects of nurturing your youth in line with Islamic teachings. In this program, our discussions are rooted in the guidance of the Holy Quran and the timeless wisdom of Hadith from our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the insightful narratives of our noble Imams. I'm glad to have with us today Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, a research scholar from the Seminary of Qom, who possesses a wealth of knowledge in both Islamic studies as well as psychology. So, Brother Liaqat Abbas, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, today we are going to discuss another topic which teens suffer a lot through, that is peer pressure, and how we're going to deal with this as parents, as guardians, as teachers. Well, Brother Liaqat, you know, so much peer pressure out there, so much teens confused, anxiety, and stressed out with this peer pressure. So I would want you to go ahead with the topic.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So it's very important to see where we are getting pressure from. Are we pressurized? Or if we are pressurized, is the pressure in a good manner? Or is the pressure taking us to a wrong path? Example.
Yes.
So I would start with an example where a teen feels pressurized by their friends to try to smoke or kind of even drink or to commit a bad sin or commit something which is not allowed. Their friends also, you know, they openly mock anyone who refuses creating a kind of strong sense of kind of obligation to perform that action. Oh, you know what, like example, their friends can say, oh, you don't know, you know what, you don't have guts, you don't have courage, if you want to prove yourself that you are a courageous person, then smoke a cigarette for us, you see. And I don't know, like there are kind of few games where it's like dare, I don't know, like you have to dare or you have to speak out the truth and stuff like that, where the person is kind of obliged, kind of this kind of obligation upon this person, unfortunately. So these are all pressure, like substance use is one of them, like going towards a thing which is not good.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of pressure behind. So what is the solution? Number one is the teen can actually think about responding to such situations. Example, this is like a teen who is having insight beforehand itself, okay? By saying, example, that the person prefers to stay healthy on and focus on their goals. Example, there's a lot of pressure from friends. So number one is the person shouldn't be in this kind of company of friends if it is a good person, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
By any chance, the person kind of confronts in any manner, because, you know, it's not always like what, how and how we think, yeah?
Right.
There might be a situation, unfortunately, where a teen might confront these kind of people, okay, in kind of gathering or whatever, okay, anywhere, at any place. So having good responses is very good, or saying politely is very good. And knowing this, that, if I don't do this, I'm not a courageous person, example, is not how people define,
yes.
You see. So having a kind of knowing oneself and knowing values is very important, okay.
Right.
My value is I'm valued because I don't smoke. They are valued maybe because they smoke. So having values for oneself is very important.
Right.
So knowing responses in advance, knowing about one's values will definitely help. And
yes.
Additionally, not to involve oneself in those kind of environments.
Yes.
Example, if a teen knows, okay, if I'm going to go over there, then I might have to face these kind of people. Maybe
right.
They're going to bully me, whatever. Yeah. You see,
yeah.
They're going to pressurize me. So not go into that place.
Right. We'll discuss more with you, Brother Liaqat. Let's take a short break here.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about peer pressure. And Brother Liaquat Abbas is helping us. Yeah.
So, you know, in these kind of situations, if a person is having a trustworthy friend or an adult who's going to help to go through this kind of phase, is very important, number one. But normally people don't go and tell their parents, oh, you know what, I have a few friends of mine, or I have a kind of a group in my class. There are a few classmates who kind of
who have been bullying me over a particular thing.
Yeah, or they're going to kind of come to win to me, and they're going to force me to do a few things and stuff like that, okay? And this can go up to a lot of extent, okay? And they're going to kind of torture me sometimes,
you know,
because I don't do what they say. They're going to say, oh, if you tell your parents, or example, the principal of the school.
Like, he has other own pressures, not even expresses.
I'm going to expose you, or tell you, or tell about you, or shame you, or something like that.
Yeah.
In front of other people, other class. Yep. Or even if you tell the teacher, I'm going to do this and that. So it's a kind of bombardment. It's a kind of lot of pressure upon the teen. So the first thing is, of course, going ahead and telling the responsible person and seeking help and taking protection. Even example, if it is a lot, example, okay, if it is too much, then seeking police protection is also important. And this is sometimes needed, and it is necessary. It becomes sometimes necessary. And if it is a lot of risk to life, this is like I'm going towards a bit of extreme situation, where if it is a risk to life, maybe leave the school and join another school or college or university.
Right.
You see? So that a person, if the principal is not taking action, if the teachers are not able to do anything, then leave the place. Okay? It's what is more important than life, you see?
Right.
Okay. So coming back to our scenario, normally good people don't want to go into these kind of groups. But if there are few teens, example, who have these kind of friends, then definitely they're going to have to like see it some tough time on the day of judgment.
Right.
And if it is in this manner and they're kind of compelled to do things and they kind of want to be known in that group.
Right.
And they did few things which shouldn't be done, then they're going to say a verse which is very famous. And it's from the Holy Quran.
Let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's take a pause and discuss that after a short break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing, and you're listening to the topic peer pressure today. When teens are suffering through going through this peer pressure, Brother Liaquat, you said that friends have impact, and you were going to discuss a verse of Quran for us.
Yes, sister. So there's a verse from the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Furqan, Surah number 25. The ayah number is 28. Where a person of this kind, example, who has gone under peer pressure, example, or who had bad friends and was listening and was kind of adopting what they say, their qualities, example, will say, Ya waylata, laytani lam attakhiz fulanan khalila. Ya waylata, woe to me, grief be upon me. Yeah. Laytani lam attakhiz. I wish I had not taken fulan and so and so as a friend, khalila. So grief be upon me. I wish I had not taken so and so as a friend. And this will not go ahead with just a single person.
Kind of meaning that I wish I didn't accept. I wish I didn't get under the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Or I wish I was not in the kind of group. Fulan and Fulan. Okay, if a person had a friend who was a bad friend, example, then this is for that one particular friend. Okay, imagine if this particular person had, like example, some 100 friends who were bad and in every stage of life. So he's going to say, Ya waylata, laytani lam attakhiz fulanan khalila. For some like 100 times, you see, I wish I had not taken so-and-so, that person as my friend. And you know, why is this happening? Like, why is this grief happening? It's because of the consequences what the person has to face on the day of judgment because of this pressure. Okay, even if there was no pressure and the person accepted or got obliged, then the person has to face its consequences. Okay, there are few places where the person might not face consequences, where it is like, where he is kind of, that is very rare, okay?
Yeah. So do not take yourself to the day where you will be sending vows to yourselves.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother, for being with us. Thank you, dear listeners. And also, be patient, because patience is not just in the hardships. It is also in the sins. Even if you are pressurized, but calm down yourself. Have patience in sins. Thank you for listening. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets of this life we see. When you feel you've lost it all, when you don't know who's your friend, always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins. Don't be saddened by what you see. I know life can be crazy, a showcase of hypocrisy. In the fall of piety, it's just one big mystery. For you and me, when you feel you've lost it all, when you don't know who's your friend or foe, you wonder why you're so alone. Worry ends when faith begins.
When faith begins.
Don't be sad by what you see. It's true, life has its miseries. One thing's always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins. I found my peace deep within.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters. 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
As solidarity with Palestine has increasingly expanded from the global south to the global majority, Arabs remain largely ineffective. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, explaining Arab political failure to challenge the Zionist regime through traditional analysis, such as disunity, general weakness, and a failure to prioritize Palestine, does not capture the full picture. The idea that Israel is brutalizing Palestinians simply because the Arabs are too weak to challenge the child killer Benjamin Netanyahu government or any government implies that, in theory, Arab regimes could unite around Palestine. However, this view oversimplifies the matter. Many well-meaning pro-Palestine commentators have long urged Arab nations to unite, pressure Washington to reassess its unwavering support for Israel, and take decisive actions to lift the siege on Gaza, among other crucial steps. While these steps may hold some value, the reality is far more complex. And such wishful thinking is unlikely to change the behavior of Arab governments. These regimes are more concerned with sustaining or returning to some form of a status quo, one in which Palestine's liberation remains a secondary priority. Since the start of the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza on October 7, 2023, the Arab position on Israel has been weak at best and treasonous at worst. Some Arab governments even went so far as to condemn Palestinian resistance in the United Nations debates. While countries like China and Russia at least attempt to contextualize the October 7 Al-Aqsa Storm operation on Israeli occupation forces, imposing a brutal siege on Gaza, countries like Bahrain place the blame squarely on the Palestinians. With a few exceptions, it took Arab governments weeks or even months to develop a relatively strong stance that condemned the Zionist regime's offensive in any meaningful terms. Though the rhetoric began to shift slowly, the actions did not follow. While the Ansarullah movement in Yemen, alongside other non-Arab state,
actors attempt to impose some form of pressure on the Zionist regime through a blockade, Arab countries instead work to ensure Israel could withstand the potential consequences of its isolation. In his book, War, Bob Woodward disclosed that some Arab governments told then-US Secretary of State Antony Blinken that they had no objections to Israel's efforts to crush Palestinian resistance. However, some were concerned about the media images of mutilated Palestinian civilians, which could stir public unrest in their own countries. That public unrest never materialized, and with time, the genocide, famine, and cries for help in Gaza were normalized as yet another tragic event, not like the war in Sudan or the strife in Syria. For 15 months of relentless Israeli genocide that resulted in the killing and wounding of over 162,000 Palestinians in Gaza, official Arab political institutions remained largely irrelevant in ending the war. The U.S. Biden administration was emboldened by such Arab inaction, continuing to push for greater normalization between Arab countries and Israel, even in the face of over 15,000 children killed in Gaza in the most brutal ways imaginable. While the moral failures of the West, the shortcomings of international law, and the criminal actions of Biden and his administration have been widely criticized for serving as a shield for Israel's war crimes, the complicity of Arab governments in enabling these atrocities is often ignored. The Arabs have, in fact, played a more significant role in the Israeli regime atrocities in Gaza than we often recognize, some through their silence and others through direct collaboration with the child killer regime of Israel. Throughout the war, reports surfaced indicating that some Arab countries actively lobbied in Washington on behalf of Israel, advocating against an Egyptian Arab League proposal aimed at reconstructing Gaza without ethnically cleansing its population, an idea promoted by the Trump administration and the Zionist regime. The Egyptian proposal, which was unanimously accepted by Arab countries at their summit on March 4th, represented the strongest and most unified stance taken by the Arab world during the war. The proposal, which was rejected by the Zionist regime and dismissed by the United States, helped shift discourse in the U.S. around the subject of ethnic cleansing. It ultimately led to comments made on March 12th by Trump during a meeting with Irish Prime Minister Michael Martin, which he stated that no one's expelling anyone from Gaza. For some Arab states, to actively oppose the only relatively strong Arab position signals that the issue of Arab failures in Palestine goes beyond mere disunity or incompetence. It reflects a much darker and more cynical reality. Some Arabs align their interests with Israel, where a free Palestine isn't just a non-issue, but a threat. The same applies to the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, which continues to work hand-in-hand with the Israeli regime to suppress any form of resistance in the West Bank. Its concern in Gaza is not about ending the genocide, but ensuring the marginalization of its Palestinian rivals, particularly Hamas, thus blaming the PA for mere weakness, for not doing enough, or for failing to unify the Palestinian ranks is a misreading of the situation. The priorities of Mahmoud Abbas and his PA allies are far different. Securing relative power over Palestinians, a power that can only be sustained through Israeli military dominance. These are difficult, yet critical truths, as they allow us to reframe the conversation, moving away from the false assumption that Arab unity will resolve everything. The flaw in the unity theory is that it naively assumes Arab regimes inherently reject Israeli occupation and support Palestine. While some Arab governments are genuinely outraged by Israel's criminal behavior and growingly frustrated by the U.S. irrational policies in the region, others are driven by self-interest, their animosity toward rising Arab non-state actors. They are equally concerned about instability in the region, which threatens their hold on power amid a rapidly shifting world order. As solidarity with Palestine has increasingly expanded from the global south to the global majority, Arabs remain largely ineffective, fearing that significant political change in the region could directly challenge their own position. What they fail to understand is that their silence or their active support for the Zionist regime may very well lead to their own downfall.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens of Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the regime continues with its aggression on the besieged territory. The Yemeni armed forces have conducted another drone strike against Israel in support of the people of Palestine. And rallies have been held in several countries across the world in condemnation of the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. Thank you for joining. In Gaza, it's been another deadly day as Israel continues to bomb the Strip from air, land and sea. Nearly 40 Palestinians have been killed since dawn, most of them in the south. In the latest attack, a Palestinian was killed in a drone strike while he was riding a bicycle in Khan Yunis. To the north, at least